You're tuned in to our 4th of July 2025 flashback weekend, a look back at some of the biggest stories we've been covering for you so far in 2025. What you're about to hear is a previous broadcast.
This is continuing coverage of the case against Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Be nice when Daybell is over, but there's going to be more. Today, we're diving into one of the most twisted family sagas in modern crime history. The case of Lori Vallow Daybell, the so-called Doomsday Mom. What started as a strange tale of religious obsession spiraled into a chilling series of deaths. Her children, her former husband, even her new husband's previous wife, for added measure, all gone. Lori's been convicted now in 2 states. But beyond the headlines and courtroom drama, we've got to ask, how does a seemingly loving mother come to believe her kids are zombies and that God wants her to help send them to the afterlife? You know, like a good loving mom does. To help us unpack the tangled mess of delusion, manipulation, and likely undiagnosed mental illness at the heart of all this, we're joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, who's seen the kind of psychology that turns ordinary people into self-proclaimed prophets of destruction. Siobhan, to kick us off, is this a case, now that we've gone through another trial of, pure evil, or is this someone who's truly lost herself in a dangerous belief system? And what's the line between delusion and calculated destruction here?
Yeah, it's fortunately, we don't see many people like her in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a rare combination of somebody who, some of the evaluations, I've read summaries about her mental health. And again, I have not met with her, but these are people who have met with her, and there were some summaries online. Somebody who had a pre-existing personality problem with traits from narcissism and histrionic, which means attention-seeking, somebody who really, can manipulate people just for the sake of attention. And of course, narcissism, that's a big one to unpack, but somebody that is always out for themselves and manipulates and uses people. A lot of negative qualities with that. So somebody that had this pre-existing long-term personality type who then in her 40s became delusional. And delusional disorder it's kind of confusing, so I'll break it down a little bit.
Okay.
Because delusion means you have bizarre beliefs that absolutely cannot be true. Mm-hmm. And it's different from something that's a brain disease like schizophrenia, because that's where somebody also has a lot of confusion, loose associations. They don't make a lot of sense when they talk. And, those are the people on the street talking to the telephone pole or ranting, to invisible people that they're mm-hmm. seeing that no one else can see. But delusional disorder, the person can look very normal in most of their life. And they may function well in a career or an occupation, or they may do a fairly good job of raising their kids, except for this one area. And she became increasingly religious starting in 2017. She'd always been religious in the LDS faith, but became obsessed and these bizarre things that were out of, the canon of the church. Family members noticed that she was becoming increasingly odd. And so delusional disorder like that allows people to still function. You don't look at them and immediately know they're crazy. But this content of the delusions for her is grandiosity. She thinks she's a goddess. She's an ascended being. She talks with angels and Jesus all the time. So things that we would look at, okay, this is out of the norm, even for a religious person. It's too extreme. And then, of course, when she met Chad Daybell, who also had delusional disorder, the two of them fed off each other and developed this paranoid sense that the zombies and the demons were after them. And it was a terrible combination, the two together, terrible combination. And then with her pre-existing personality problems, with this layered delusional disorder on top, it's, very dangerous.
Is there something, and I'm sure it's different in every case, but is there something that triggers the delusion disorder, how like seemingly like 1 month they can be, you know, they can look at something that would be crazy and go, that's crazy. And then the next, it's like, oh, totally normal. This makes total sense to them. Is there something that like triggers it, pushes them over an edge where suddenly, you know, black is white and white is black, and they seem to not be able to comprehend that just not that long ago, what looks crazy is now completely healthy and normal?
Yeah, I don't think we can identify that there's something that causes it. That's a great question. We would love to know that. But it does seem to be a disorder of the brain, and there are probably genetic factors. You know, most kinds of severe mental illness like schizophrenia develop in the late teens or early 20s, but delusional disorder seems to kick in the 40s, and we don't really understand what is it. You know, possibly about the aging brain that mm-hmm. sets some of this off for people.
Is it literally just like the pathways are firing to the wrong places, and then the human, as it comes out, it's just okay. That's it feels like this is the right place, so I'm just going to go with this, and then everybody else seems to be completely off except for them.
Yeah, it's an alteration in their thinking process, in their way of perceiving the world, and it's relatively uncommon, but fortunately uncommon.
When they're getting pushback, like from the rest of the world, like Lori Vallow certainly has, do they recognize that? I mean, do they go, wait a second here? You know, people used to be like kind of on my side, or I could like integrate into society just fine and life was fine. But when suddenly the whole world looks at you and goes, you're wrong, you're just completely off. Why does that not somehow kick something off in their brain to go, maybe we should reevaluate if everyone is suddenly telling us we're wrong? Maybe there is something wrong. I think when most people, if suddenly you're really off on some way of thinking that, and you don't have just delusional disorder, but somehow you perceive something one way and, oh shit, I'm really wrong on that. They never have that moment. It seems like it never happens. And they somehow believe it's them against the world.
Exactly. And it's that paranoid quality that makes them so dangerous. It mm-hmm. really is them against the world in their thinking. And it's almost like the more that they're confronted with, you know, this can't possibly be true, they double down and then everybody else becomes the enemy. And we know in Lori's case, Charles, her husband, was trying to get through to her and trying to be logical and trying to be rational. And what ended up happening to Charles? You know, they killed him. And one could go on and say that had this been unchecked, there would have been other deaths that followed, because anybody who opposed her was going to die.
I know we don't see this type of disorder, at least to the level that Lori Vallow Daybell has shown it on a common level. But are there a lot of people out there that are just kind of waiting in wake where it's not even like up to them, but it's like they're just kind of a step away from getting to Lori's level? Folks who are hyper religious, and I'm not trying to knock religion here, so nobody take it that way, but mm-hmm. some folks are just super hyper religious to the point where, and this is my own experience of seeing an individual in my world a while back, someone I was close to in a romantic relationship who was very religious, but had, and I've seen it in other people too, this complete lack of care for life or death, where they believe they're not of this world. They will literally say that. There's things where everything is the enemy. Anything negative is the enemy. It's the devil.
Right.
And they're reckless. I would see it in driving patterns. I would see it in just ways of putting themselves in dangerous situations where death could occur. For themselves or others, especially if they're like in a driving type situation. That to me felt a bit delusional, where mm-hmm. they're willing to kind of put their life on the line because they're good with death at any moment in time. They're not there to live this life because they think the other side is all of it. And everything here, I've checked the box, I'm done, I don't want to be here anymore. I mean, some would look at that as suicidal, but mm-hmm. it's not quite like that. It's more like, well, when God takes me, he takes me, and that's just how it's supposed to be. Never mind, I'm, you know, going the wrong way down a highway or something like that.
Wow.
You know, that sort of thinking. I mean,
it's not complete delusion. It's not to the level of Daybell, but it's the religiosity in it that seems to allow them to go to such a length without regard for themselves or others and be completely fine and happy the way that Lori Vallow has presented herself. Is that, are there a lot of people out there like that where like they could step over that line to Daybell territory pretty quick?
We hope there's not a lot of people out there like that, but I hear you on, I think it's probably a continuum with religiosity, mm-hmm. and a lot of people who are probably fairly well grounded in reality still believe that prayer helps in mm-hmm. some way. Kind of difficult to prove that scientifically, but it's a, you know, harmless belief system. They're not out seeing the devil everywhere, but you do see a continuum. And I think that's one of the difficult things is, how do we know where to draw the line between something has veered into dangerous category? We do see a lot of cases. We've had some in Oregon where people who believe in faith healing and are very religious have allowed their children to die because mm-hmm. they've denied them medical care, and they end up prosecuted and usually convicted. Mm-hmm. And so at what point does society step in and say, you know, you're endangering people here? It's a very tricky gray area, and people can debate about it a lot.
Sure. Were you surprised? This, at least I was about this. The lack of religiosity that she intertwined into her questioning, her lines of questioning on mm-hmm. cross mm-hmm. in this trial. She didn't mm-hmm. present any sort of defense. I was kind of surprised by that, but she didn't go into crazy territory. And when she did talk about Nephi from the Book of Mormon, it wasn't in any sort of extreme ways. It was just, why do you think I'm only going down the road of where God commands him to kill people? There's all these other books of Nephi and all these other things that he did. Why do you think that this is the only road that I would be going down? She didn't get into zombies. She didn't even entertain these things. And I was kind of surprised by that because that's not the Lori Vallow we all know and love. Mm-hmm. It to me showed a sense of control. It showed a mm-hmm. sense of awareness that I didn't mm-hmm. think she had, where mm-hmm. she knew if she went down that road, it seems it wasn't going to play well to a jury, and the jury wasn't going to see it from her perspective. I was kind of thinking she was oblivious to what the jury thought, and she was going to use it as a platform to preach. What was that? I mean, the consciousness of it was a little spooky because it made me think maybe Lori is in a little bit more control than we all think she is.
That's another interesting aspect of this, because people have gotten feedback when their ideas are considered nutty, and they know it's not going to serve them to share that, mm-hmm. you know, with the general public. They do seem to have the ability to control it. And even if that's what's going in their head, they don't talk about it. But I was surprised as well that, you know, she didn't veer off into that more during the trial. But, you know, I've mentioned this to you before, but when I was in undergrad school for psychology, I was volunteering on a mental health crisis line mm-hmm. and, you know, take calls in the middle of the night from suicidal people or strange people, people who were disturbed. And there was a man in the local community who was a medical doctor mm-hmm. with a thriving practice. And he was a very good doctor. People liked him. He seemed normal, but he had a delusion. He had delusional disorder that the local Catholic hospital was euthanizing people. And he would call in the middle of the night when he was agitated and upset, and he would want us to take action in some way against the Catholic hospital. And so he would write letters and he would do all these, you know, crazy things. Obviously, the Catholic hospital was not euthanizing people. Mm-hmm. But you know, this was something he really did believe, but he was able to keep it contained and still function in a medical practice and do a decent job. So that was one of the strangest cases that I'll never forget.
I mean, and is that dangerous then to have somebody like that in the position they were in, where clearly he was separating it, you know, for a long time, maybe forever. But the fact that he's like one, you know, whatever, iota away from seemingly I could see something going wrong in his medical practice or something, and suddenly he's, you know, integrating some other weird belief over there, and nobody's catching on until it's too late, and he's, you know,
he's euthanizing people or something.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I mean, it seems weird. Like it could go bad very, very fast.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have somebody with delusional disorder, you know, should they be in medical or in medicine or should they be, I mean, are they qualified to be in really much of anything that where there could be a risk to human life?
Yeah, no, I was very concerned at the time and took it to a supervisor. And I think because of confidentiality and no imminent danger, I don't think that we could report it or, you know, do anything. But yeah, very concerning. You don't want your doctor to be delusional. You really don't.
No. Let's talk about histrionic disorder. You know, I know more about it too, but I don't know that the audience knows a ton about it. It's gotten thrown around a lot with Lori. I know that she was diagnosed with it as part of her whole cluster of things. Explain that better. I know grandiosity is a huge thing to it, but you know, what is kind of the general definition of it and how does it apply to Lori?
Yeah, people who can be very dramatic and do very big emotions, but they're very superficial. And typically women with histrionic personality are flirtatious. And I have often thought about Lori, the way she engages with people, even the way she engaged with the police after Charles' death, and kind of flirty and giggling. There's this undercurrent of sexuality that they tend to leak, even when they get very old. You'll see, you know, people in their 70s and 80s, and they've still got this girlish little coquettish manner. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something that I've seen with her. There were even times in court where she, you know, she just kind of does this little voice and does this little flirtatious kind of routine. Mm-hmm. But they can get a lot of attention because of the way that they put themselves out there in front of people. They enjoy the attention.
Yeah. And then they get the feedback loop going where it's like, oh, this works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they, I mean, obviously a lot of these things are very debilitating. A lot of times people don't recognize that they have them, don't seek help. And, you know, and the people we get pushed out of their lives and they just kind of go from, you know, like a tornado from one place to the next until people catch on. For somebody like a Lori, I mean, obviously Lori's pretty extreme here, but anyone who sees some of these diagnoses that Lori has, and maybe they have someone in their life who has one of them or both, or God, I hope not, or all of it. But let's say you got some of them. I mean, is there much treatment? Is there ever pulling anybody back from a delusional disorder through therapy, through medication, through anything? Or sometimes is it just, look, this is the road they're on. This is how their brain works. And we don't have a way to correct it at this point.
Unfortunately, it's the latter. Yeah, we have not found really any medication that would significantly impact the delusional disorder. Unlike schizophrenia or other kinds of disorders where there's psychosis, medication can be very effective and just sort of knock the delusions and hallucinations away. Mm-hmm. But with delusional disorder, that has not been proven to be true. And they're not open to therapy because if the therapist tries to give them an alternate version of reality, well, then they flush the therapist. You know, then the therapist is part of the zombie troop or whatever. They do not want to hear reality. And so they're very resistant to talk therapy. Medications don't seem to work. They're just who they are. And I think with things like narcissism and histrionic personality, I will say sometimes they can succeed in Hollywood. I think you do see a lot of celebrities who are very attention-seeking, very sexual, very flirtatious. You watch the award shows and you look at what people are wearing and you go, okay, that's a little attention-seeking there.
Yeah.
But, you know, for having somebody in your life with these qualities, you're just stuck with them. And usually it's the family members who go to therapy to go, oh my God, my sister, my mother's driving me nuts and I don't know what to do about that. And we can help the family members.
Yeah, to try and cope with what they're, it's like Al-Anon, but it's for this, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, award show, like the most personality disorders under one roof at one time that have not been diagnosed or accepted.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at all by some of the things that she was saying in trial? What she was trying to justify, I thought was interesting, specifically about her reactions to what took place the day that Charles was shot. Her her story in court. And it seems she planned this out. Like, okay, I'm going to say this and everyone's going to think this is great. You do know that, you know, when someone's under a lot of stress, they get dehydrated. So that was the justification for Burger King. That and Charles had promised the kids that, oh, we're going to go get Burger King, and then he's dead. So she has to make up for that, taking to Burger King, and she got water, because if you're stressed, you need the water. Mm-hmm. In her mind, when she's in that cell, is she thinking, damn, that's going to land good? People are going to hear that, and they're going to be like, oh, well, that explains all of it.
Exactly.
Did she think that going in, or was she just in her state just throwing things at the wall at that point?
Yeah, it shows this little cunning quality she has, this manipulation. And she comes up with these things that sound absolutely ludicrous, but I think she does convince herself, well, of course, you know, this makes perfect sense. The other thing that I thought was, her story, this wasn't any sort of planned killing. This was just a family tragedy. Mm-hmm. And so we're all supposed to have empathy. Oh, how sad, a family tragedy, which is completely bizarre. Her hand was in all of this, in all these deaths.
Yeah, I mean, the family tragedy. The thing is, I think she believes it's justified. The family tragedy is filled with delusion, and that's the problem with it. I think she views it as a family tragedy, but I think the tragedy in her mind is that, you know, Ned Schneider is possessing Charles, and then he has to die. It's so tragic that he had to be killed, because Ned Schneider it wasn't that your brother killed your husband out of whatever that was. Let's talk about that relationship a little bit. A brother that goes to that extreme for his sister. And let's assume that, you know, there was an imminent danger here. I don't think Charles was attacking anybody. But Alex thought this is a time to take him out. And I don't know that Alex was as delusional as she was. It's hard to know. He's dead, obviously. But the fact that he was kind of her henchman, what do you think was going on there?
Really, really weird family relationship, huh? Because it sort of smacks like a cult member, like somebody who is so under the control of one of these, you know, really powerful, emotionally powerful people. And Lori and Chad certainly fit the profile of cult leaders. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like he just bought into it and was there to do their bidding and meet their needs, and found a great deal of identity from his role and felt important. It's certainly just another layer of bizarre that a brother would murder the way he did.
And there's been a lot of talk over the years, because it just seems like you're too close. You're too close to your sister. This is weird where you're going. I mean, I don't have any siblings, so it's hard for me to like relate to people with siblings. But just from the outside, you look and go, okay, you know, of course you're going to be there for your sibling. You're going to look out for them. You got their back, that sort of thing, if you're in a good relationship. But to this level, it made you really wonder what else is going on here. And there had been reports from people who had, you know, witnessed their interactions over the years at get-togethers and such. I'm sure there was green chili chicken enchiladas going on. As we know, Lori's a great cook of those. That's one of the major points we learned in this. They allegedly, there was a lot of, faux sex play, if you will, where it looked, they'd be joking and acting out sex acts on each other, brother and sister, to be funny. What the hell's going on? If you're doing that, that's a little odd. Is that not, if you're doing that with your sister, and not like they're doing it in public or anything, but the fact that you're even like emulating this in front of other people, that can't be healthy.
No, it's completely creepy. Non-clinical word, creepy.
Yes.
But yeah, really pathological and a huge red flag. And yet nothing about this case would surprise me. So
yeah. When you see siblings, and I'm not even necessarily speaking about this case in general, but are there cases where you see siblings, a brother, a sister, whatever the combination may be, where where that's going on, and it kind of explains some of the devoted behavior to such a weird degree, where they almost kind of take on the role of partners to each other, like what you consider like a romantic partner, but they've somehow deluded themselves to thinking that, you know, this is how this is. I mean, I get it. I don't get it, but you know, you get it like out in the sticks or something where it's like, okay, this is kind of an inbred family, but the ones that are like out there, you know, every day in real life, like Lori was, like Alex was, does that exist? You know, I'm sure it does to some extent, but do we see that where there's that weird level of closeness, and somehow that's the bond that keeps them together?
Yeah, you certainly can see it, but I don't think it's as common. There's certainly incest between siblings that happens, but it's usually the older brother, significantly older brother with a little sister, something is going on. And that's traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, that ends up pushing people apart and causing chaos in the family. But to have an enmeshed, almost romantic couple bond between siblings, more rare, but yeah, it's certainly possible. And that would explain a lot of his weird devotion to her.
Yeah, it does. It certainly makes you wonder. I think we'll never know the answer to it. I know I've talked with the normal brother, the healthy one. He has said he never believed he saw that. He never thought that was going on. But, you know, you only see so much. He wasn't, you know, super connected to a lot of them for a long period of time. So I know it makes you wonder. I don't know that I want to know the answer, but it certainly makes you wonder.
Yeah.
If true crime is your obsession, we've got you covered. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today for nonstop coverage, expert insights, and in-depth analysis.